Good morning. I'm going to call the meeting to order. Representative Christensen, have you reviewed the minutes? Representative Christensen, have you reviewed the minutes?
I move the March 8th minutes.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. We got a busy morning here today. Okay, your first bill up this morning is Representative Christensen. Chair will move that House File 2127 be held over for inclusion in the
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 2127 is actually a Department of Corrections agency policy bill. The provisions in the bill are clarifying or are technical fixes that support the department's ability to be able to efficiently carry out its functions. These include allowing our correction officers inside facilities to be able to administer Narcan in cases of opioid overdose, which can save a life. And this gets rid of an old statute that creates conflicting rate of per diem pay based on legislative auditor's recommendation. One of the provisions in this bill is essentially allowing the department to use body scanners. I'm aware that our committee has already heard a bill by Representative Tabke to do that same thing. This is included because it was an agency policy bill and came through a little bit later than Representative Tabke's bill. Both have the same language and do the same thing, and we would like to spend more time on the other provisions, but are happy to answer questions about the body scanners provision if needed. I have Commissioner Schell here from the Minnesota Department of Corrections to share more information about the provisions. I also have individual subject matter experts here from the department to answer any deeper technical questions that members may have. So I would like to welcome Commissioner Schell.
Commissioner Snow.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity to hear this today. We are asking for your support. As Representative Christensen mentioned, this is an agency policy bill that addresses a number of technical fixes. And I would just go over some of the high-level issues that this addresses and then stand for any questions. And as was mentioned, a range of people from the DOC here that can answer more specific or detailed questions. First, as was mentioned, the provision of Narcan, this really is a change to Minnesota Statute 151.37, which really already provides authorization for certain people to use the Narcan in instances of opioid concerns around opioid overdose. And this simply adds correctional officers to that list. As you are well aware, our population does have a high percentage of folks who suffer from opioid addiction, and while we do everything we can to keep these substances out of the facilities, there are times when opioids can enter the facility, and the ability of our correction officers to be able to administer Narcan becomes a critical life-saving tool. In addition, in some places around the country, the use of Narcan has also been a critical component of officers being able to help another officer who may be exposed to an opioid or other type of substance, and that often can come in through the mail room. So this, we believe, is an important provision and simply provides authorization for them to use Narcan under the direction and with training under the direction of our medical director or a licensed registered nurse as long as they have been trained. Second item is a fugitive unit authority. What this essentially does is it provides a broader range of authority for our sworn fugitive unit members. These are licensed peace officers in accordance with the Minnesota statute and post board rules. What this would essentially allow is for them to assist agencies in the full range of law enforcement duties and to be able to exercise the full range of authority as a peace officer in the assistance to another agency. This change provision is consistent with what has already been approved by the legislature for the Metropolitan Transit Police Department. The third is a medical director authority. This is a provision in the law that essentially would allow the medical director to be able to make healthcare decisions for an inmate who is on a conditional medical release and in an outside facility. But right now, as it stands, our medical director does have the ability to make those types of healthcare decisions while they are inside a Minnesota correctional facility. And this is when family is not available or is uninvolved with the person. In this instance, when a person is on a conditional medical release, which is oftentimes end-of-life situations, and it is in those times when people, the services required by a patient are such that the ability to provide them within the facility is very limited. In this situation, the DOC medical director would be able to make those healthcare decisions on behalf of that patient who is in an outside facility. And this really stems from a request by the Minnesota Department of Human Services when a person who was in DOC custody was released on a conditional medical release to the DHS forensic nursing home. And some medical decisions needed to be made, and the technical ability of our medical director to make those decisions was limited by current law. Had that person been inside of our facility, the medical director would have been able to make those decisions. And then finally, this last item is just a technical fix to conflicting statutes related to the per diem at Red Wing. You will note that in Minnesota Statute 403.13 stipulates that counties will pay 100% of the cost of confinement at Minnesota Correctional Facility at Red Wing. And a more recent statute, Minnesota Statute 242.192, provides that counties will pay 65% of the cost of confinement, excluding educational costs, for juveniles. This is the current practice in the Department of Corrections and is widely understood. This came about as a result of an Office of Legislative Order recommendation that the Minnesota Statute 403.13 be repealed because of the conflicting language. So those are the core provisions that we are seeking action on today, and I would stand for any questions, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Okay. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just point out, I believe you have tucked this into your omnibus, too. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
That is correct.
Okay. So there's also a provision in here specifically about counties, and so I just want to make sure that the path, there are a few provisions within the omnibus bill, and this would be another example where we are changing something dealing with counties that this would go to GovOps. Is that your plan, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Though I think they're going to like it since it's less money. Anybody else? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify to this particular bill? Seeing no one, I will renew my motion to lay a House File 2127 over for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wolf, my honor.
Ready? All right. Chair Considine moves that House File 1948 be referred to the Public Safety Committee. Chair Considine, I see that you have a DE4 amendment. Would you like to move the DE4 amendment?
Why, yes, I would, Chair Wilkerman.
All right. Chair Considine moves to amend House File 1948 with the DE4 amendment. The author has requested that we hear testimony and entertain amendments before voting on this amendment. We will take public testimony on each amendment and the bill as a whole at the end of this omnibus markup. Chair Considine, would you like to offer some brief testimony before I ask House Research to walk through the contents of the DE?
We'll keep it real brief. Yes, this will be our vehicle bill for the omnibus bill. It will include at least three Republican bills. Is that it? Or I'm trying to think, is there another one in there that I'm missing? I'd like to thank the committee. This has been a reasonably bipartisan effort that we've worked together on. I think we've all had quite a few of the same goals, and it's been kind of a pleasure. I would like to maybe think about at some point referring to the omnibus bill as the Joseph Gomm bill as we move forward, if it would bring some solace to the family. But I'll leave that up to you guys at some point, because that's getting rolled in. So anyway, I will now defer to House Research. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this point, I'd like to ask House Research to briefly summarize the component parts of the DE4 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the DE4 begins with a piece of Representative Sandel's House File 1575 related to mental health screening. That's Section 1. Section 2 is a piece from the Ombudsman for Corrections Bill, which is House File 1399. And if you have I'm working off my summary that I prepared for the DE4, so hopefully you have that in front of you, which denotes which section is and which bill, the underlying bill it came from, so you can track the source of the language. The language, and another caveat, is that the language included here includes amendments that were adopted before the bills were laid over for inclusion, so it wouldn't necessarily be as introduced, but as laid on the table after the committee worked on the language. Sections 3 and 4 are the Representative Tabke's House File 733 related to the security screening provisions. Section 5 is the first piece of Majority Leader Winkler's private prison ban bill, House File 1237. Sections 6 through 12 are the remaining policy pieces of the Ombudsman for Corrections bill. Section 13 is Representative Zerwas's House File 493, which is the administrative and disciplinary segregation provisions. Section 14 is also is a piece from Representative Winkler's private prison ban bill, House File 1237. Section 15 is Representative Zerwas's House File 339, which relates to retention and use of criminal DANG data identification. Section 16 is also Representative Zerwas's provision from House File 1020 regarding same-sex escorts for inmates being transferred. Section 17 is another piece from Majority Leader Winkler's private prison ban bill 1237. Section 18 is the Local Correctional Officers Discipline Procedures Act, which is House File 2010 by Chair Considine. Section 19 is the second provision from Representative Sandel's House File 1575 related to mental health screening of those coming into the jails. Section 20 is the base bill 1948 as amended in committee, the Coordinated Crisis Response Plan. Section 21 is House File 1315, which increases the number of correctional officers that are allotted and provided for. Section 22 is another appropriation section. It contains two appropriations. One is to implement the underlying bill 1948, the Crisis Response Plan, and paragraph B is to appropriate funds for the Ombudsman for Corrections. The final section is the appropriation piece for House File 733 related to the, which is an appropriation, small appropriation to the Commissioner of Health. And that concludes the overview of the DE-4.
Thank you. And Mr. Diebel, just to clarify, are the bills in the DE-4 amendment in the form that they were when they came before the committee?
Mr. Chair and members, they are in the shape that were when the bill was laid on the table. So if it was amended in committee and laid on the table, then that version is incorporated into this delete all.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Diebel. Members, are there any questions or comments?
Okay.
Seeing none.
Chair.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Chair.
I do. Minority Leader O'Neill and I have been trying to ensure that we keep the Ombudsman bill moving, but it's not quite ready. And so we want to make sure it's thoroughly and appropriately vetted. There are some issues with the bill, and so we've arrived at a compromise. We will be moving the omnibus bill and reconvene to send to GovOps with the corrections omnibus to GovOps and through the Rules Committee at a date to be determined later. I stated that correctly, Representative O'Neill?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's correct. Okay. It actually has a few provisions that should be seen in the Government Operations Committee. One was what I pointed out in the previous bill that's now wrapped up into this bill is one, and then also if it's your intent, Mr. Chair, to include county jails in the Ombudsman's purview, yes, then that would be something that Government Operations should take a look at, and I'm sure the counties would like to weigh in on that as well. So thank you for hearing my concerns.
Thank you, and I appreciate the cooperation. We actually chatted last night during judicial for a moment about the, expanding it. So I'm good at this point.
Mr. All right. Chair. Very good. Anything else, members?
Mr. Chair, I do have one.
Yes, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also would like to point out that the data provisions have gone through judiciary civil law, so I'm satisfied with that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill.
All right. Anything else, members? Okay. Now I'd like to move on to amendments. Chair Katsunan, I see that you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Why, yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
Chair Considine moves to amend the DE-4 amendment with the A-1 amendment. Chair Considine, would you like to testify to the purpose of the amendment?
Yes, I would. Basically, it gets the bill in the shape I want, which is to make it the vehicle bill for the omnibus bill. So.
Very good. Are there any members of the public who would like to testify on this amendment? All right. Seeing none, any
Chair,
questions or discussion from members?
Oh, sorry.
Representative O'Neill.
Excuse me. I didn't mean to jump ahead of you. So I would just point out that the A1 actually refers to page 10 of the DE and line 25, and it changes assistant commissioner to deputy commissioner is actually the change that this particular amendment makes. Maybe the chair would like to speak to, you know, if that was just technical in nature or if it was some other reason. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, Mr. Chair.
Just trying to follow the chain of command, basically, is actually Representative Zerwas, you have a different question, or are you wanting to weigh in on this? I will defer to Representative Zerwas.
Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As we're looking at how individuals are kept for prolonged periods of time within segregation units or solitary confinement in the state prison system, the goal with a portion of the bill of the underlying bill is to create measures of accountability for who is signing off on individuals being kept isolated for longer periods of time. And so the hope is that at some point either the commissioner or deputy commissioner would sign off on that prolonged time within segregation. And so switching from an assistant commissioner to one of the deputy commissioners makes a lot of sense and goes with the intent of the bill.
And stays within the chain of command.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Any other discussion or questions, members? Okay. Well, thank you for the discussion. I would now like to move to a vote. Chair Kasvan, would you like to renew your motion to amend the DE4 amendment with the A1 amendment?
I would.
Very well. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Chair Considine, I see that you have an A2 amendment. Would you like to move the A2 amendment?
I would.
Chair Considine moves to amend the DE4 amendment with the A2 amendment. Mr. Chair, would you like to testify to the purpose of the amendment?
I'll just defer to the House.
Mr. Dubel.
Mr. Chair and members, the A2 amendment amends the Local Correctional Officers Discipline Procedures Act by removing the requirement that an attorney be allowed for in the hearing or when the officer's statement is taken.
Very good. Anything further, Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Diebel, and I would just note that this was done at the request of the stakeholders.
Thank you, Chair. Any questions or discussion from members? All right. Is there Representative O'Neill?
Sorry, yes. So I have a concern. I guess we didn't hear from the stakeholders when we were considering this amendment before, and I would like to hear from them because I have a concern that, you know, if an officer is in this situation, that he would not be allowed to have his own attorney there. And I find that very curious, I guess. I don't know where I would give up my rights to an attorney, and I'm just curious if there's someone here that can testify as to the agreement between the stakeholders where someone would give up their right for an attorney in this situation. I'm just not quite understanding the logic behind that.
I'm not sure that there's anybody. Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I share those concerns and actually had talked to them at great length about this, and particularly if there was a chance that there were going to be charges associated with the statement. But at this point, what they're looking for is for basically the union representation to step in first, and then if they feel like there's a need, they will, or if there's some indication that there would be an attorney needed, then they would contact the attorney.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Chair Constantine, can you tell us who the stakeholders are that were involved in this conversation? I just am having a hard time understanding why someone would give up their rights to a lawyer.
Chair Constantine.
I'm sorry. They're not giving them up. It's just not included in what we're putting in the statute. No, they are definitely not giving up their rights to an attorney. It would be the AFSCME Union, Teamsters Union, and Department of Corrections were all people that were consulted on this.
I believe.
All right, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. If I remember correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, please. If I remember correctly, this language was modeled after language in existing law for peace officers.
That is correct.
That's correct?
That's correct. It actually brings them on parity with what peace officers have in statute.
Representative Zerwas.
And so, Mr. Chair, I believe that having an attorney present is what's on parity for peace officers. And so I don't know why we would be removing that for corrections officers.
Chair Considine.
Thank you. Again, my preference was to leave it in. And I, at this point, to make it easier and get it through, agreed to take it out. So I'm assuming that they have the best interests at heart for their members, and again, it does not require them to give up an attorney. It's just not included in what we're going to be putting into the statute.
Representative Sir Ross.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess, Chair Constantine, what it does do, though, is it would remove from statute the right for a correctional employee to have an attorney present when their formal statement is taken. And so, I mean, yeah, you could bring in an attorney later after the formal statement has been taken, but, I mean, the cake's kind of baked at that point. So I guess, Mr. I wish there was.
I wish there was too. Was
someone from the representing union here, because this just seems odd to me that there would be an instance where a correctional employee would be under investigation, would be set for a formal. For an interview and providing a formal statement that can really lead to both relief of their duty, termination from employment, and criminal charges. And this proposed change that they can't have an attorney present, well, they don't have a right for it. Once this change is made, we're putting in statute that they have a right to a union representative. In your language here, this vote takes away the right for them to have an attorney present. And so, and now there's no one, you're saying the union is insisting on this language, and they're not here to tell us why. I mean, I think this is bizarre. I would urge members to vote no on this. I don't see any reason at this point we would put in statute the inability for someone who's being interviewed as a part of a formal investigation to not have an attorney present. It's not how we treat peace officers under existing law. I know this, the whole idea of this was to bring in alignment, how we treat correctional officers to be similar to how we treat peace officers. This doesn't do that. In fact, this would deny them the ability to have an attorney present during their formal statement. And so I would encourage a no vote.
Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair and members, and normally I would agree with Representative Sirwas on this. However, you weren't at that particular meeting because that was in DPS, and or rather Public Safety Committee. And so I think what Representative Constantine is saying is that there was an issue with the language not being in on time, so we held off. It was? Okay, very well. So we held off on that because the amendment wasn't appropriately before us. However, we did have representatives, Mr. Chair, there from the union, who expressed no concern with the language and basically told us that these are rights that they have arduously negotiated in contract, exist in their contract. So the message I'm getting, quite frankly, is that that's where they prefer to have that, to have that contract language then be the ruling, if you will, framework for this. So the bottom line is that, Representative Constantine, I think, is acting within the advice that he's gotten from them in terms of looking at the language and saying, we don't have a problem with this.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Considine.
It absolutely does not, though, prohibit them from getting an attorney. It is what we're putting in to make sure, but it does not exclude them from asking for an attorney. And that was something that I was very clear about in the discussion, that if they felt like there was a need, they could go ahead and do it. This is just talking about what the responsible,
Before we get to further member questions, I would just like for House Counsel to weigh in on this. Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair and members, the statute does not prohibit them from having an attorney. As drafted, it says a union representative or an attorney. So maybe that the union would prefer to have their but the language in the bill would provide for either one or the other. And so it may be that the union would prefer to have their representative there in lieu of a private attorney. But I'm speculating there. But as drafted, it doesn't prohibit, even after the amendment, they would still be entitled to hire an attorney. And if the employer, I suppose, objected, then that would be the only reason that would be a problem to having them present.
Thank you, Mr. Diebel. And it looks like we do have a representative from the union if they'd like to share their comments with us.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zaras.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, if we look at the amendment, the A2 amendment, and one of the things it does is on page 14, line 2, it deletes attorney or both. And so the language as amended would read, the correctional officer may request the presence of a union representative at any time before or during the session. And so I guess you're removing from statute the ability for them to request an attorney. I mean, it's right there on the paper.
Mr. Chair, members? Any further discussion?
I have some.
Representative O'Neill.
So, thank you that you have tried to bring this intent forward. I have great concerns about this amendment, as I did, not just because it came late, but other concerns as well that we're striking this from language, because when we strike this from language, then that tells, you know, if this goes through a court process, it tells those that are reading this language that we intended to strike that language. And so what we're doing here is not just a small thing. This is a very big thing. I'm not comfortable with this amendment, and I see now we have a union representative to explain why, but I'd actually like to hear from corrections officers themselves too, but, you know, that's beside the point. I have great concerns about this, because when you're striking that language, that also means something. That also says, no, you can have representation from the union, but you do not get to ask anymore for an attorney. That's what we're doing here, and so I have great concerns about that. But maybe the union representation can explain to us why we would want to do that and how that's in the best interest of the employee.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, Richard Kajewski, the Public Affairs and Communications Director for Maine. I do not represent any of the corrections officers that are referenced in this bill. I can just give you a little bit of background on how it works with the state of Minnesota. If a person is being questioned for something that could be later brought forward to the courts for charges, the state provides a Garrity warning to those members. A Garrity warning is going to require someone to give their statement to the employer, but it also means that it can't be used in future legal proceedings. Otherwise, the employee without the Garrity warning would have the right not to speak without further discipline, if that provides some clarity to you.
Thank you, Mr. Kajewski. Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Kajewski, as I understand, the intent of bringing the original bill forward was to bring the process for getting statements from correctional officers in line with the process of getting statements from peace officers. This A2 amendment removing the attorney brings that out of parity with peace officers. Is that the intention of the union, to have corrections officers treated differently than peace officers?
Mr. Kajewski.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, I don't know what that intent is. This isn't a bill that the labor union that I represent brought forward. I'm just telling you, as somebody who represents people who work in corrections, how that works when somebody is doing something that violates state statute and can be prosecuted under the law. What I would tell you, Representative Zerwas, is that a person still can exercise their right to an attorney. I'm just telling you, if they're giving their statement, which is what you had brought up earlier, the state has to use a Garrity warning, or as a union representative or an attorney, they would tell them the same thing. They do not have to cooperate with that investigation. They do when the employer provides a Garrity warning, or they can be terminated for not being cooperative.
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, I think I do see a union representative for correctional officers in the audience. I'm wondering if he'd like to come down and visit with the group for a while.
Yes. Mr. Max Hall, would you like to provide testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sorry, I'm bouncing around between here and taxes. So,
and please just state your name for the record.
Yep, Max Hall, legislative representative with AFSCME Council 5. We represent about 2,000-plus of the state's correctional officers. So the reason why we came forward and expressed our concern with the attorney language that was contained in the bill simply deals with the exclusive representative. As the exclusive representative, what we were nervous about initially was that the potential to circumvent the exclusive representative process could be undertaken. And so that's essentially why we came forward and spoke with Representative Considine as well as the Senate author of similar language. So it was the whole process of the exclusive representative that we were nervous about that could be circumvented, if that helps.
Representative Zerwas.
Thank you for that. And I guess my question is, this language is on par with how it's laid out in statute for peace officers. And so I know LELS and other organizations that represent peace officers apparently don't share the same concerns. They deal with this area quite extensively with their membership and providing their membership the opportunity for legal representation at the same time as these interviews. Has your union or your representatives engaged in discussions with union representatives of peace officers in the state of Minnesota and understood why they apparently don't have concern with the language as it deals with peace officers, but you all do?
Mr. Hall.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas, yes, we have had discussions not with LELS specifically, but we have with the Teamsters. And so what my understanding is with their process, it's a little bit different. They tend to have more attorneys versus like an in-house shop similar to ours. And so that's why we came forward with this concern. But I wasn't aware that this was going to be taken up this morning, to be honest. And so, you know, we have had those discussions at least with the Teamsters, and because they have a little bit of a different model than we do in terms of representation, lawyers, and field representatives that we have, that's essentially just why we have a different position or had a different position on this.
Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Hall, thank you for coming and providing testimony this morning. I understand bouncing around, we all got excited. Yeah. Week, you know. I totally get that, and I understand that. I still have concerns that this committee will be taking a formal action to put into state law the inability for a state employee to request, during this process, to request that an attorney's present. And so I would encourage members to vote no. This is something that could be revisited as the bill continues to move forward, and perhaps after AFSCME has an ability to visit with some labor unions that deal extensively with this. I mean, I understand, I guess, how the staffing model might be different, but, you know, we're talking about your memberships, dismissal from their job, potential termination, and depending on what the issue is, likely criminal charges that follow upon these types of investigations. I think it would be wise for the union not to advocate their membership from not having rights to legal counsel. And so I think that's very troubling. It's very concerning. I think your membership, quite frankly, Mr. Hall, should be concerned with this advice. And I would encourage a no vote.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. But again, as Mr. Diebel said, this does not prohibit people from asking for an attorney. And with the Garrity, again, I shared your concerns, particularly as it applies to criminal charges. They can still ask. There's nothing in this that says they cannot. This just outlines some of the things they can do and a process. But as Mr. Diebel pointed out, there's nothing in there that says they cannot request an attorney. That's a constitutional right. And so there's nothing we can do, actually, I don't believe, that prohibits somebody from asking for an attorney if they want to.
Representative Zerwas.
Well, Mr. Chair, if your assertion is that no matter what we do, they can still ask for an attorney. Why are we in 6 portions of your bill specifically striking the language that says an employee can ask for an attorney? It doesn't make any sense, members. If the chair's assertion is that no matter what we do, an employee can ask for an attorney, so in 6 instances within this bill, let's strike the language in which an employee can ask for an attorney. That makes no sense. That is bizarre. And so if the chair's assertion is that legal counsel is always available, I don't see why we would do backflips to delete from state statutes an employee's ability to ask for legal representation.
Thank you. Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, just very quick, my question is for Mr. Hall. Mr. Hall, so you've heard the concerns of the discussion here. It seems to me like perhaps we should do some more work on this. Is that a much more comfortable position for you? And obviously I haven't spoken with Chair Constantine about this, but I'm thinking, you know, we should probably pull this out to have that conversation and then take it from there. But I'd be interested in your opinion.
Mr. Hall.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Mariani, Representative Mariani. I guess I don't really have a position. I'll probably leave that to the committee at this point. I just wanted to make sure that our concern on this bill was raised, and if it has to take care, go forward in this venue, then so be it. But the reason why we came forward with this language, as I said, is that we were concerned that the exclusive representation process could be circumvented potentially by an attorney. And so when you had the language in the bill that allows for either an exclusive representative, so a field representative in our case, or an attorney, that's the language that we were concerned about. But we had those discussions with Chair Considine and others on this provision, so you know we did at least have that discussion, as well as with the Teamsters going to Representative Zerwas's point. But it was our position and it's our agreement with the Teamsters, if this is helpful to members of the committee, that we were fine with the bill as long as it didn't have the attorney language and didn't include state correctional officers. So if it included the local correctional officers, but the removal of the attorney language, that's the agreement that we were comfortable with. But if you want us to have more discussion, we can certainly have that going forward.
Well, Mr.
Chair Mariani,
it sounds like there ought to be more discussion here, and I'll certainly defer to Chair Considine on this, but if there's some level of uncertainty, you know, unanswered questions, you know, whatever, then maybe we ought to hold off until those fuller conversations have been had. But I defer to Chair Considine.
Well, Chair Considine.
Just a moment. Let's continue to work on it. I'm going to withdraw the amendment at this point, and we will continue to work with the stakeholders and clarify some of these concerns.
All right. Chair Considine withdraws the A2 amendment. Thank you, Mr. Hall. Chair Considine, I see that you have an A3 amendment. Would you like to move the A3 amendment?
I would.
Chair Considine moves to amend the DE4 amendment with the A3 amendment. Chair Considine, would you like to testify to the purpose of the amendment?
I'll defer to counsel to explain it first.
All right, would Mr. Diebel?
Mr. Chair and members, the A3 amendment is Representative Christensen's House File 2127 minus Sections 1 and 2, which were the screening provisions from Representative Tabke's bill that were already in the DE4, so they weren't necessary. But the remaining sections from House File 2127 are in the A3, the agency policy bill, and offered for inclusion in the DE.
All right, thank you.
again, we just heard the bill. I don't really have anything much to add to that. So,
all right. Any questions or discussion from members? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I would just point out that by amending this section in, that we will the path will be to go to government operations so they can review it with the counties.
Correct.
So thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, members? Is there anyone in the public who would like to provide testimony? Okay. Seeing none, I would now like to move to a vote. Chair Considine, would you like to renew your motion to amend the DE4 amendment with the A3 amendment?
I would.
Very well. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Chair Considine, I see that you have an A4 amendment. Would you like to move the A4 amendment?
I would, and would like House Counsel to explain it.
Chair Considine moves to amend the DE4 amendment with the A4 amendment. Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair and members, the A4 amendment amends the definition of agency in the Ombudsman for Corrections provisions to limit the scope of their jurisdiction.
Very good. Anything further, Mr. Chair?
Only that this was a provision that Representative O'Neill helped with.
Very good. Any discussion from members? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Chair Considine could just tell us what's still in the purview and what's in the scope for the Ombudsman.
And I will defer to Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Diebel.
Mr. Chair and members, if this amendment is adopted, the focus would be on agencies, both state and local, that have secure facilities and cover the care and custody of inmates and persons in local facilities that are. And so it removes juvenile residential facilities, treatment facilities, and limits the scope of the Department of Corrections to those charged with the care and custody of inmates, those who work for the Department of Corrections.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Debo. Mr. Chair, any?
Again, this was we did expand it from just the 10 prisons to county jails. NAMI had some real concerns with that. And, again, I know Representative O'Neill is a strong supporter of NAMI. And this is the part that actually we talked about a little bit last night during judiciary. So,
all right. Any questions or comments from members? Representative O'Neill.
So I would just point out on the record that, just as you had said, we're including regional and local jails, lockups, workhouses, work farms. I believe detainment. Did that one get stricken? Look at that one there. Okay. Just following along in the amendment. Okay, so there's still a rather large scope, and I don't know how many folks that covers, but it's definitely not the 10,000 inside the prison walls, and so I can't even tell you how many folks are inside the county jails. I don't have that number in my head, but the scope is substantially larger than the several discussions that we had, so I want to make sure that we know that that's what we're doing, if that's what you want to do with this amendment. In the conversations we had in committee and offline, we'd kind of gone back and forth. I know when you had presented your bill for Ombudsman, you had an idea that you wanted to contain it within the walls of the 11 prisons. So this now expands it quite a bit, and I'm assuming the fiscal note that would follow this would be rather expansive as well, and I don't know if that has been a consideration. Obviously, you need staff that will be traveling all over the state to 87 counties to go to jails and lockups and workhouses and everything of the like. So if we're going to do this, I think that we just need to understand the full scope of what we're doing. It is different than what we talked about in correction committee the last time. So if you want to speak to that, Chair.
Chair Considine.
No, I agree. The concerns from AFSCME, or not AFSCME, from NAMI came in. I felt like they had a really good point, but again, we are going to take this to GovOps. We will continue to work through it. And again, I wanted to make sure that, again, last night, that before that happened, it wasn't sprung on you as a surprise. So, yes, we will continue to try to move it back into government ops. And but I think it's probably a pretty good idea overall that we have the ombudsman is able to look into local jails and things too.
All right, Representative Mariani.
Well, Mr. Chair, I want to thank Representative Castellano for trying to work through, kind of threading a bit of a, you know, a needle here. And I was part of those conversations the other night as well. I mean, the point here is that NAMI and others are pointing to, you know, real needs that exist out there. And that, at the end, is what we exist here to do, is to respond to that. My understanding, Mr. Chair, that the Senate, you know, had this conversation and their fiscal note, you know, came in, and I think it'll be a little bit less because Representative Considine, you know, has narrowed it down a little bit more, but at that point they were talking $1.8 million. And, again, I you know, this, I think, really hews to our original wisdom as a state relative to the ombudsperson's presence. For all our citizens and residents in the state of Minnesota, there are real issues out there that we just can't put our heads in the sand and ignore. And I think it's a good amendment. And I know that Chair Considine will continue to work through with both sides of the aisle to make sure that the scope is where it ought to be, and then obviously to make those numbers work within our budgeted target.
Thank you, Chair Considine.
Again, and I appreciate the discussion we've had. I know that this is a concern on both sides, and I've appreciated the help that we've had pushing this forward. The change in scope was kind of a last-minute requirement, but I think, again, I believe we all recognize the need, and so, again, we'll continue to work on this as we go forward.
Thank you. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess just my thought is the potential of looking at having the department evaluate two sets of language as far as the fiscal note process with the idea of let's not let perfect get in the way of good. And so if the larger, more expansive language that would wrap in county facilities become something that is not tenable for the final budget targets of the committee, I think it would be behoove us to have another set of language that could be fiscal noted by the department to look at the cost of just the 10 facilities, and then there's a backup.
There's an option, yes.
Yeah, and so that's what I would recommend moving forward. It gives you flexibility as you put your final budget together, and it's not an all-or-nothing approach from that point, and I think that would be a good step. But this is, I appreciate the work you're doing and how inclusive you've been in this process.
Thank you. Chair Considine.
I think that's a really good idea. Again, I think everybody on the committee agrees that we need to move forward with the ombudsman. But we will certainly take a look at both options.
So, Mr. Chair,
Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, we'll obviously be wrestling with this in terms of the target for the Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice reform. You know, you and I were in the facilities visiting along with a couple of other members, you know, the residents, and they were asking for this. And it became clear to us as we interacted with our correction officers, even though they weren't asking for it, they were clearly asking for some presence, you know, that can facilitate the relationships in those facilities so that they can be safer. You know, members, and I don't know where the final fiscal note will be on this, Representative Serwas, but, you know, just to put it in perspective, there's a $45 million you know, request on the table for correction officers alone. And so, you know, just to keep it in scope, and, you know, we'll be wrestling with those, you know, with those numbers, you know, in the coming committee, but I think the public policy is spot on with what our experience has been as we interact with people in this sector.
Very good. Any comments there, Mr. Chair?
Representative Mariani, or Chair Mariani, is absolutely correct. We, this was something that was specifically asked for by the residents, but when we were talking to the staff, they were voicing concerns about communication, and really look at this as a answer for that. One of the reasons that we would like to include that with the county jails is that it would also be beneficial for both residents and staff there, too. So we will take a look at both options, but it is my hope that we can include them in that.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Considine. Wondering if NAMI is here today. I'm kind of looking around to see if they're here, that they could speak to this, because they obviously were a driving force behind this change, and it was outside of the scope that you initially had considered, and so this really has kind of ballooned to a much bigger concept. So I'm, you know, since it's so important to them, I would hope that they would weigh in. I guess I don't see anyone from NAMI here. I guess not. So I would ask then that as this moves forward, if we all are in agreement to keeping it to the scope, that as it moves to public safety, that if you can invite them to come and testify in front of us so that we can hear the concerns and hear the reason why we're expanding the scope so large, and to kind of get to the fiscal note, because I'm assuming that's going to be a substantially larger fiscal note when you're talking about 10,000 in 11 sites or 11 prisons, 10 sites, versus, you know, 87 counties across the whole state. That's a pretty substantial change. So just so that we can kind of get a handle on that as well. And I do have two amendments that would have narrowed the scope, because that was the conversation that we initially had. And then, of course, we had a very late conversation yesterday that you had asked if I would be okay with you broadening the scope. So I'm certainly amenable to broadening the scope, just so that we have a full conversation as to the implications of that, both, you know, how large the ombudsman's office will need to be and the fiscal impact for that, but also the impact on the residents of those facilities as well. So I just wanted to get all of that on the record, too, and that we can continue to have these conversations, Chair Considine, as we move forward and go on to public safety. Thank you.
I think it would also be nice to have NAMI's comments on the record, too. So, yeah, we will certainly try to get them here.
Okay, any further discussion, members? Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, we certainly will fully vet all this. I mean, I think what's been happening here is that we've been putting more, clarity around what the parameters would be for this. I know everyone's been working on that. You know, to your point, it's 87 counties. It's pretty logical that to pursue deep down, dive deep down in all those circumstances, this office is not going to be able to do that. And so to some degree, it's really about being a place that receives, responds sort of in a triage manner as opposed to, deep work. That's what I'm imagining. And I think that's why, there's been this narrowing in terms of what the scope, of the inquiry and intervention would be. But for sure we'll have a deeper conversation and try to be able to tie all that into a number that we can all feel comfortable with.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. To that point, thank you, Chair Mariani. And I think that the conversation that is a little bit lacking is just the scope. And so how many folks are we talking? How many facilities are we talking? We know there's 87 counties, but the scope is still rather large, even beyond the county jails. It's juvenile temporary holdover facilities, regional and local county jails, lockups, workhouses, work farms, and so on. So it's, I don't even know how many that is. So I think that's a conversation that we should have in public safety if we move this language forward. So how many facilities is that? How many inmates or residents are we talking about? I think those numbers are really important to understand as we move this forward.
Mr. Chair, you don't get any disagreement with me on that. I think the issue for us at this point, as we raise that issue, is what is the policy scope and expectation? And I think what we're hearing is that there is a good argument on why, whatever level that's going to be, depth of intervention that's going to be, that we should be inclusive of these facilities. And I, like you, look forward to ongoing testimony from advocates to make that case for us. But our sense is that it's an appropriate scope.
Just a final question. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Chair Mariani. I think we're on the same page. I hope as we move this forward into public safety that we have a little bit more information, because it's been a little difficult conversation because we're not quite sure what we're talking about. It sort of started off a little bit awkward, and so we've sort of been learning along the way. And I just feel like once it's fully vetted and we really understand the scope of this, then we'll have a little bit more comfort level. I'm comfortable moving this forward as it is, and I would withdraw my two amendments to that effect. But I definitely want a full conversation when we come to public safety, and that would be my only request.
Thank you. All right. It looks like we have an advocate who would like to come and provide some testimony. Please come forward and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm the public policy coordinator for NAMI Minnesota. I apologize for not being able to be here for this meeting. The work for mental health advocacy is never over. But as I understand it, there is an interest in us making a comment on the corrections ombudsman, and particularly the scope of what the ombudsman can cover or look into. And it's NAMI's opinion that this should include more than just correctional facilities, but the jails. In terms of the complaints or questions that we get from our members, they occur far more often from jails than they do from correctional facilities, although that's also an important need. And so we would urge the committee to keep that language in this bill as it is in the Senate version. We are hopeful that this won't dramatically increase the fiscal impact of an ombudsman program, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Smith, and Representative O'Neill.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And since we do have NAMI here, thank you so much for coming to testify. Do you have a sense as to how many facilities this is? Do you have any information for us to give us a better understanding of the scope? How many facilities, how many inmates, how many residents?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill,
Mr. Smith, I
do not have that information on the top of my head. I'm happy to provide it. What I can say is that the services provided by an ombudsman are not necessarily going to be required by every single person who's placed in a jail or every single inmate. And in the event that the requests being made to the ombudsman are beyond the capacity of the ombudsman to immediately reply, they will have to triage in some way. And in our mind, that is appropriate, but I'm happy to provide more information.
Okay, thank you. Is someone from DOC here who could speak to how many jails they oversee that would be involved in this? Or county commissioners? Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a number I do not have off the top of my head. But I would just say that having had conversations with NAMI about this in the preparation as well, I believe that probably the most compelling issue was some of the concerns that may come up on occasion around folks who are requiring or seeking assistance with access to certain medical type of services. I think it's also important to recognize that really oftentimes, with the exception of pretrial detention, you do not have people detained in county jails for longer than a year, which I think is an important consideration. So I think, the ability for people to access and have some remedy, I believe, was important to them. But the actual number, I don't know, but I wanted to at least address some of the conversations that we have had with NAMI about this.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Members, any questions or discussion? Yes, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. So thank you, Commissioner Schnell, for bringing that forward. And I would just ask the commissioner, as he's heading back to his seat, that you'll have that information hopefully for public safety so we have a better conversation and discussion.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Commissioner.
We will absolutely have that information.
Thank you, Commissioner Schnell.
Okay, members, any further questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else from the public who would like to provide testimony at this time? Okay,
Thank you for your discussion, members. I'd now like to move to a vote. Chair Considine, would you like to renew your motion to amend the DE4 amendment with the A4 amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Very well. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. And Representative O'Neill, just would like to clarify my understanding that you have withdrawn the A5 and the A6 amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will withdraw the A5, but I would like a conversation on the A6. And then depending on how the conversation goes, we'll, I may move that as well.
Okay, very well. Yep, so
if I may,
you may continue with your conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to the A6, this would narrow the scope of the ombudsman to for subpoena power over the Department of Corrections. And so that is what this amendment does, and I would be open for a conversation about that.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Mr. Chair.
I would say that at this point I would vote no on this. But, again, we're going to have ongoing conversations about this bill, obviously, and this is something we can continue to talk about. And, frankly, I guess I'm not as optimistic as Mr. Smith as far as the costs go, but, that again, that's something that we're going to continue to work on. And, you know, I thought Representative Zerwas's idea of having two options and taking a look at them is probably a good idea. But at this point, I guess I would not like to accept that amendment.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my thought is, you know, this whole scope has sort of been more like a balloon, expanding, contracting back and forth
and forth.
Yeah. And so at some point we need to sort of land on what the scope will be. And what's really important is that the subpoena power lines up with that. And so
Right. We
want to make sure that that is what that is. If we're going to expand to the county jails, then this we may need to expand the subpoena power. But right now I think the subpoena power is a little bit too broad. So I would just ask you to take a look, as you're looking at other things, to take a look at the scope of the subpoena power to make sure that it's in alignment with the scope of those that the ombudsman would cover. I would be fine with withdrawing this amendment, but this be something that we'll be discussing when we get to public safety again. So just everything's in alignment. And, you know, we had quite a bit of conversation about scope, and so this is just another piece of the scope to make sure that it's in alignment.
Mr. Chair.
And I agree with the statement. The expanse came kind of at the last minute. And again, I believe everybody is on board on both sides with the importance of the bill and making sure as many people as possible is covered with it.
Thank you, Chair Considine. Members, any further discussion? Okay, seeing none. So you're, Representative O'Neill, you're withdrawing the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I'll withdraw it, and we will reconsider that for the next committee stop as we figure out what scope we're going to be under. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. At this point, with the A5 amendment being withdrawn and the A6 amendment being withdrawn, we'll now move on to the A8 amendment. I see that we have an A8 amendment. Would someone like to offer the A8 amendment?
Mr. Chair, yes, I'd like to offer the amendment.
All right, Representative Pearson moves to amend the DE4 amendment with the A8 amendment.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A8 amendment removes the appropriation for the Department of Corrections to develop a crisis response plan. You may recall that during the testimony that Commissioner Schell testified that they can do it with existing resources, and that's why I would like to remove that piece.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion from members on this A8 amendment? Chair Considine.
Again, I would urge people to vote no on this. I heard what the commissioner said, that he could do with existing resources. But once again, I'd like to keep the option if they come by and think they need a small appropriation, that I believe this is, again, important enough that if there is something that is unforeseen, the custody staff, as I brought up about their life expectancy and some of the other troubles, I think we really need to give them support. And so, again, I'd like to leave the option for the appropriation to be in there.
Representative Poston.
Mr. Chair, I see Commissioner Schnell is still with us. If he could come down and just talk to this again, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. Thank you. I think the issue we have is right now we do plan to initiate some form of a program to be able to provide assistance to do that using some of our existing resources. And really what we're talking about is kind of designating people within our facilities to be navigators or resources to other peers within inside the facilities as an adjunct duty to their regular duties. So the way in which that there could become more cost is if we designated it as its own kind of special unit where we allotted personnel, or we needed to access outside services, whether that's through a contract for services or something like that. But right now, really, our thought is a way of kind of initiating this was to really look at trying to make it an adjunct duty, create kind of this little specialist group with inside the facilities, and that's where the lack of cost came from.
Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, this money is set aside, or this appropriation is set aside for the development of the plan, not the operating of the plan. Is that correct?
I believe that is, Representative, the thought that there was a plan. The statute would require us to establish or develop a plan and present that back to you, as I recall. Ultimately, I think the goal certainly would be to try and operationalize whatever that plan would be. And again, as was discussed last time, we would really try to think about the way the plan could be beneficial, not just for the DOC, but even for some of our partners on the county jail level as well.
Thank you, sir. And I
Representative Poston,
I guess we'll be seeing this bill moving forward so we can continue to address this.
Okay. Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to observe what Commissioner Schnell, what I had. You did better recalling what you said than I would have anyway. And my understanding is, so we're in the process of developing the plan. So it is a little bit, I would argue, Representative Poston and members, a little bit premature for us to, you know, just cut off, any possibility here for resources depending on what happens with that plan. So it's sort of a timing issue that's going on here, but I think we have on the record from the commissioner twice a pretty strong commitment that, you know, the WISE recommendation that he's going to be offering relative to that plan development is to maximize the existing staff and resources here, or staff resources within the department. Running my own nonprofit, I get the sometimes one-time needs to be able to access, you know, outside, you know, advice, you know, outside tools, you know, et cetera. And so I would hate for us to, in essence, determine what your plan is going to be by not making it possible to have some resources to honor that plan that your department is going to be working on.
Representative Poston.
I think I will just continue to follow this going forward then.
Okay. Any?
What's that?
Oh. So, Representative Poston, would you like to withdraw your amendment, or would you like to renew your motion and proceed with the vote?
I'd like to renew my motion, please, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Poston renews the motion to amend the DE4 amendment with the A8 amendment. All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The motion does not prevail. Moving on to the A9 amendment, would someone like to offer the A9 amendment? Representative Zerwas.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A9 amendment is the language from Representative Christensen's House File 1622. It increases the correctional officer starting salary to $19.95 per hour. As we've covered quite significantly in committee, we're sitting on 80 openings right now that the department has not been able to fill. The request is to add significant funding for additional slots, but right now we're not able to fill the existing opening positions. And so we can't simply add space for more correctional officers if we're not able to fill the existing positions open. And so we've heard time and time again concerns about the starting pay and the fact that correctional officers, even after several years, can still leave the Department of Corrections and go to a county facility and make $3, $4, $5 an hour more on their very first day within the sheriff's office. And so I think we need to have the discussion and move this along with the fact that we have to be competitive and we have to be able to recruit the best from across the state of Minnesota. This bill had been introduced. It was scheduled for a vote for a hearing, and unfortunately that hearing was never able to happen in this committee. And so I just wanted to make sure everybody on the committee had an opportunity to vote for this starting salary increase. And so, Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call on this vote.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Members, any discussion on this amendment? Chair Considine.
Just one. I believe it's actually 90 positions, not 80. But I've got no problem with it.
Okay, very good. Anything else, members? Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I think for now we're fine voting for this. It's an unusual way for us to be budgeting, though. First of all, thank you for making it $19.95. That's well above or a little bit above the minimum wage, the true minimum wage of $15 an hour. And so I'm going to look forward to continuing to work with you about setting our minimum wage in our state so that people can actually make a living. It is, I think, unorthodox. I'm new to the committee and new to the financing. And so obviously if this goes on, we're going to have a deep conversation because this, I think, is an unusual way for us to drive, you know, what our, you know, typically we appropriate without putting into state statute, I believe, you know, what the wage would be. So we can certainly have that conversation within the fiscal, you know, conversation. But, you know, at the very least for us to send a signal here of what's important, I'm okay with this. I suspect that the representatives of our workers would probably prefer to keep this within the scope of their collective bargaining conversations. And so I know you were defending that earlier, Representative Zerwas, so I would look forward for us to be consistent about honoring that. But, you know, at this point, I would say we vote for the A9 amendment.
Okay, Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm excited for the broad agreement. With the broad agreement, I'll lift the roll call request.
Very good. Any further discussion, members? Any discussion from the public? Okay, seeing none, Representative Zerwas, would you like to renew your motion to amend the DE-4 amendment with the A9 amendment? Very well. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. And members, I see that we are coming to the end of our time here, so would we like to... Okay, well, seeing that we're at the end of our time for today, we'll invite the chair, Chair Considine, to take his place back here with the gavel. Oh, okay. Excuse me, members. I see we have an 810 amendment. Would someone like to offer the 810 amendment? Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We heard a lot as we talked to correctional officers about the challenge that they face in getting to the top of their wage scale, that after 5, 6, 7, 8 years, they're still at the position where the department can't retain those employees with a competitive wage, where those individuals can still be sniped up by county facilities. We saw, I think, a testimony in the joint budget presentation. We talked about the fact that right now, to get to top pay for one of our DOC guards is, I think, a 13-year progression. And so it is a significant time period, and quite frankly, one that is unlike nearly every other law enforcement contract I've seen. Most other agencies look at between 3 to 5 years to top patrol, some to 7 years. Minneapolis PD is kind of an outlier. They have a longer step system to get up to top patrol, but it is not the norm. And so what we would do here is we would condense the wage scale, and this will help with retention. We've talked before, as Chair Considine corrected me, it's a 90 open positions that we're currently looking, and we're looking at adding potentially 100 plus more. Well, members, we can't just appropriate the money with the same low wage and the same inability for people to get to top pay in a timely fashion, and then be shocked when the turnover continues at 25-plus percent. And so we need to address these issues, and we need to address them the best way that we can, which is by putting things in state statute. I understand the concern with collective bargaining in that process, members, but quite frankly, the fact that this is still such a prolonged process to get someone to the top of the pay scale, to me, it is very troubling. And so I think we should make sure that this is condensed. It's an important public policy and corrections policy issue as we talk about employee retention moving forward.
Thank you. Any discussion from members on the amendment?
I would say,
Chair Considine.
Thank you. The same comments as the last amendment, and the same concerns. So I'm in favor of it.
Very good. Any further discussion from members? Anyone from the public who would like to provide testimony on this amendment? Okay. Thank you, members. Representative Zerwas, would you like to renew your motion to amend the amend the DE4 amendment with the A10 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Very well. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Okay. I see that we have an A12 amendment. Would someone like to offer the A12 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would.
Representative O'Neill moves to amend the DE4 amendment with the A12 amendment. Representative O'Neill, would you like to testify to the purpose of the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So through the amendment, the A12, we had a couple organizations come in and talk about what the transportation issues within the prison system and transporting folks in for visits. And unfortunately, both of those bills were written with direct appropriations, which we, again, really don't do. And so I have drafted an amendment to make it back to a competitive grant program, which is something that we do. And contain it within the governor's ask, which was a $300,000. So in this particular grant proposal, a competitive grant is specific for Shakopee and taking care of the children coming down to Shakopee and making sure that there's still a reading program. That was a very compelling testimony. And, you know, I now that I'm a grandmother, too, I realize how incredibly important it is for that bonding. And I really want to be supportive of that program. And this is a nice competitive way to do that within the parameters of what we normally do. And so that's what this amendment does.
Thank you. Members, any discussion? Representative Kapke. Chair Considine.
Does your amendment limit it strictly to Shakopee, or would there be transportation for the other prisons?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Chair Considine, it would be specific to Shakopee.
Chair Considine.
Okay.
At this time, we'd like to ask the Department of Corrections if this is language that is similar to the language in the budget bill. Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, we do not have, you know, this is included in the governor's budget. We do not have an objection to this. We ultimately believe that it is important to provide these services, so we have no objection.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative O'Neill for putting this forward. I am fully in agreement with this for Shakopee and excited to vote for it. So thank you.
Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I know there's been a focus on Shakopee, and I think that's appropriate, but I don't believe the governor's language was exclusive on Shakopee. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Chair Mariani, I believe the language, there was a more specific focus on Shakopee. I don't know that it was exclusive, but it was a heavy emphasis on Shakopee to try and engage there.
So Mr.
Chair Mariani,
and perhaps, you know, Representative O'Neill, we can, I think this is probably going to go on because I think we like this work, but perhaps we should just keep an open channel about this, about seeing where else within the system, you know, this kind of work might be appropriate. And I certainly, obviously Shakopee is where we have, you know, our female offenders, and so, you know, connecting, them with their children is the humane and also smart thing to do. But I'm still learning about our entire system, and I suspect that the governor's less exclusive language might have been thinking about that as well, and so perhaps we can think along with him on that.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just found the testimony coming forward, and I don't recall, Chair Mariani, if you had been a part of that discussion, but the testimony coming forward was so compelling, and, I can only speak from the female gender, but I can tell you that the relationship between a mother and their child is so incredibly important, and the comprehension with the thought process of, you know, having books and having a more inviting environment, it just seems like Shakopee is really ready to go. I don't know where the other prisons are, and so I'm trying to go in the direction of where the testimony was leading us, where the compelling arguments were leading us, where, you know, this is a pilot program, so we need to start somewhere. So that is really the impetus behind this. Just felt that that would be a good place to start. I know that while the fathers need attention too, I just thought this would be the most compelling place to start because they've done the most work. Mm-hmm. Shakopee's done the most work to prepare for this.
I think that's fair.
Thank you. Chair Considine.
I'm going to support this amendment, but I feel that the bond between a father and child is equally, and grandfather and grandchildren, is equally important, and it is in the literature bonding between either parent. It's the single greatest indicator of whether you're going to have recidivism or not. So as we're moving forward, I would like to make a case that fathers not be left out. So again, I'm going to support the amendment, but I guess that's a fundamental belief that fathers and grandfathers are important too. So.
And Mr. Chair, just a final
Representative
comment.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Just a final comment. And, of course, I wouldn't want to get in the way of a father or child either. I'm just saying that if it's going to be a pilot project, the Shakopee is kind of geared up and ready to go, and they've got more that we could accommodate the funds. And so that's why I have the amendment. And with that, I would like to move the amendment. And I don't need a roll call, but if we just
I'll
call for a vote.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Is there any further discussion from members or from the public? Seeing none, Representative O'Neill renews her motion to amend the DE4 amendment with the A12 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Chair Considine, would you like to move to amend House File 1938 with the DE4 amendment as amended?
I would.
Very well. All those in favor of adopting the DE4 amendment as amended to House File 1948, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Chair Considine, would you like to offer any final testimony?
As we have expended our time, I would not, other than to say, I really appreciate the way we have worked together in a bipartisan manner to come up with what I think is a really good project. I would like somehow to put everybody's name on this. Thank you.
All right. With that, Chair Considine renews his motion that House File 1948, as amended, be referred to the Public Safety Committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. The bill is now passed, and we're on our way to public safety. Okay, members, since we've gone over our time, the committee will reconvene at 6:45 in Capitol 120. Thank you for your time and your work on these efforts. And the committee is now in recess.
Probably would help if I spoke into the microphone. People could hear me. One piece of business left here, and Representative Mariani, Chair Mariani, excuse me.
Chair and members, I move House File 341, and where are we sending this? I think we're sending it to Ways and Means, or the floor. Can you
send this to Ways and Means?
Floor?
You said it's 341. To public safety.
It's 21. Right. 21. I'm not in my committee. Wake up, girls. Mr. Chair, I move the House File 341 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform.
Mr. Chair, that bill's not before us.
Let's try 2128, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Boy, members, you know, why don't we just adjourn and come back in the morning when the chair is awake? Yeah. So I do.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry, I'm hanging on to three bills that I'm presenting today, and I just mixed one up. Mr. Chair, I move that House File 2128 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Proceed when you are ready.
Mr. Chair, this is the Indeterminate Sentencing Release Board bill we heard just not too long ago. We do have Commissioner Schnell here. That can quickly do a re-description of it, but I think for the most part, Our conversation today is really to go through the amendments and then see if there's enough votes to move the bill forward. And Mr. Chair, I do have an A2 amendment.
Would you like to offer that now?
Mr. Chair, I would like to do that. I would move the A2 amendment. And Mr. Chair, this amendment is really pretty simple. It says we were silent on the language of the 2128 about the decision-making determinant on the board, and so this says an inmate may not be placed on supervised release unless the majority of the board members vote in favor of the action. And so it uses the majority of the vote of the members. Mr. Chair, members, my understanding is that that's consistent with a number, if not all, the states, and Commissioner Schnell can correct me on this, in terms of their deciding element, as they've moved in this same direction of creating these kind of boards.
Commissioner Smell, do you have any comments, or that's correct?
Mr. Chair, members, yes. Right now there are four boards, including Minnesota, that the commissioner alone acts, but all other boards with this authority operate through a majority rule.
Mr. Chair?
Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I know that there are amendments before us on this issue. I would encourage us that we put on this amendment. This is the amendment that the author of the bill wishes to have this bill shaped up, and then we can debate amendments to the bill as amended in regards to this issue and other issues as well.
Are there any questions to the amendment?
I'd just like to speak to it quickly.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Mariani. Yes, so just as we have the conversation about the concern of just a simple majority with a decision of this magnitude, and I realize that you had said some other boards have a just simple majority, I do have an amendment. The reason I drafted those two amendments, one for a supermajority and one for unanimous vote, is because I started really thinking about it after we left committee and even a little bit more. And I would have concerns the power dynamic. So say if you have like the situation we have now where you've got the House, the Senate, and the governor, it's divided government. So if you have the majority of or two members from the House, two members from the Senate, and then an appointment by the governor, that's the five. You could potentially have three from one political party that could make every decision. So if you have a supermajority, you have to pull in someone from the minority party to agree. Not saying that each political appointment will be of a political party, but you could potentially, because they are recommended by the House and the Senate to a total of four members, the majority and the minority. And it's just it's a power dynamic that we have quite often here in Minnesota, and that's where I would have caution, because I think that if you only have a vote of three, it would be very easy for one ideology, one political party, to really kind of control that board, and the minority would continue to be the minority voice. But if you had a supermajority, then you'd have to convince, you'd have to have more unanimity between at least the four, or maybe not the full five, which, I mean, if you really want to go full, you'd have a unanimous vote, but at least you would have the voice of the minority would not be silenced, I guess is my point. So I would just have some concerns, again, with the simple majority, considering the political dynamics we have in Minnesota so often.
Representative O'Neill, no matter what the divided government would be, you'd still have two and two, minority and majority, and the governor, always. And so divided government actually wouldn't play into it. So you're always going to have two from the Republican Party, two from the Democratic Party, and then whoever the government is. There's no that wouldn't change on divided government.
So I guess I should clarify. So right now we have a Democrat governor. So the Democrat governor would appoint someone probably of his persuasion as commissioner. So that would be your third.
Right, and that's always going to be the case. I mean, divided government doesn't play into it, is I guess what I'm saying.
No, that's what I'm saying. So in most times it would be the case that you would have a 3-2 divided along party lines, which is why I'm saying if you have a supermajority, then you actually have to pull in the minority voice. You're making my point.
Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, I'm actually glad that we're having this discussion because I think it gets to the principle of the proposal before us, and it allows us on the record to articulate what our value is. Quite frankly, the whole expectation is that none of this becomes a partisan decision. As you recall from the prior hearing on this, Commissioner Schnell walked through and described the rigorous process that has several steps that lead to recommendations that then become, that would then sit before, they actually currently sit before the commissioner and will continue to sit before this panel of five members. I don't doubt for a second, Representative O'Neill, I'm not, you know, being Pollyannist about it. I understand the realities of political considerations in virtually everything we do, but the intent here is exactly to state unequivocally that there should be no partisan, you know, factor here, that the only factors are the objective factors within that process that the commissioner described. And so I'm glad we're having this conversation because, you know, we're putting that on the record. I don't think we're going to be able to escape a 2-2-1. I think that's correct. The point is that none of that is our expectation if we pass this, that none of the factors that go into their deliberation are factors that have to do with partisan issues.
Anything further, Representative O'Neill?
Just very quickly. You know, I do appreciate that. I just know that we live in a very polarizing, very political world, and Minnesota is probably one of the most polarizing places. It's quite interesting. It's always been purple. It'll probably always be purple, but I think that because we are so unique, I think it's really important to make sure that the minority voice is not silenced, and just by having a supermajority, you would include that additional voice in. You wouldn't have to include both of them in, but you'd have to win one over, you know, whichever party is in control. So I would just, you know, really, really ask for you to consider at least a supermajority. It really does make it less political because you really have to come to an agreement then, even with maybe not a political division, but maybe it's an ideological division.
You have an amendment to this amendment?
No, I don't.
I'm sorry. Representative Mariani, you have an amendment to this amendment?
Mr. Chair, I do not. No.
Not this one. Okay. any other questions, comments? Okay, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say aye.
No.
The amendment passes. Okay, let's see then. Should we take care of all the other amendments then at this point?
Mr. Chair, I believe so, and obviously, they'll be on this issue. So the bill is now shaped before you the way the author wishes it to be, and it's certainly open to amend, including the provision that we just amended.
Okay, the A3 is the A3 amendment. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Mariani. And this is exactly what I was talking about, the supermajority vote. I do think that this is a way to bring consensus and to bring the team together, even though they've been appointed by different political parties, that, you know, even if they have a partisan divide, if they have an ideological divide, that they would come together as a supermajority, 4 out of 5. And as I already stated, I really would hope that you would consider this amendment.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, members, I just conferred with the commissioner again, and he assured me that no other state is doing a supermajority, approach. You know, it could well be that someone will do this and we can learn something from it. And so I do have an amendment to the amendment to this that keeps at least some openness, on this issue. I just think at this point that we should follow, what the trend has been across the nation on this and see if, in fact, an issue does arise. I would amend the A3 amendment with the A7 amendment.
Okay.
That amendment then provides some space in the event that there's some movement in other states on this issue for us to come back to this issue and move accordingly as well.
Would you like to state the amendment, or would you like me to read it?
Mr. Chair, it's the A7 amendment.
Has everybody got a copy? Is there any questions?
Mr. Chair, I don't think there's any need for us to be an outlier on this issue.
Okay.
Quite frankly,
I'm not seeing any. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Chair Mariani, I see the direction you're going with the idea of if the amendment says if at least 5 other states require a supermajority vote to release a person subject to a life sentence, then the underlying amendment from Representative O'Neill requiring a supermajority. I think the reality is you're proposing us to make a pretty significant switch in public policy and how we handle these offenders, from keeping it from the commissioner and direct accountability back to an appointed commissioner and the governor, and spreading that out amongst a reconstituted parole board. And I think it does make sense, especially in some of these sensitive cases, that we look at a supermajority vote so that there is more of a consensus with the board as they move to make these significant decisions of people convicted of murder that you'd be proposing to release in these instances. And so I think that makes sense, Mr. Chair, and I would support the underlying A3 amendment, but ask members to vote no on the A7 amendment.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Into the A7, I haven't been here as long as you have, Representative Mariani, but I've never seen this before where if 5 other states are doing something, then we'll do it. I've never seen that in statute, and, maybe I'm mistaken, but that seems like an interesting and maybe unique way to do this. And I would just reiterate the fact that we are very unique in Minnesota. We are the only divided legislature in the entire nation right now. We are always rather divided. We always have, it's always a struggle for us to come together. We do our best, And even in this committee and in your committee, Chair Mariani, we have done our best to come together. You know, I have worked very hard to work collaboratively, but it does not come easy to Minnesota. So it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Minnesota was a leader in this, because it is something that is very difficult for us to come together. I would really ask you to withdraw the A7 and really consider the supermajority, as we really are an incredibly unique place here in Minnesota. We, like I said, we are purple. We've always been purple, and we are nation-leading. If you look at really anything, from corrections to other areas, public safety, we are nation-leading. And so I don't have a problem at all with us being the only one in the nation having a supermajority, because it fits our state. It fits our political environment. It fits how we have to do things here in Minnesota. If you think about the vast differences in the political spectrum here in Minnesota, if you think about how hard we have to work together to be collaborative, I just really would ask you to consider the supermajority. And when we're talking about someone that's committed a heinous crime, you heard Hannah Trossett's story earlier today, and we'll be hearing that again after this committee is done, and the heinous crime done against her, and she couldn't even speak of the heinous crime. She was so shaken that she couldn't even speak of it. And unfortunately, those two men are still out there somewhere. But there are plenty of men just like them that are out, that are, you know, within the prison walls, that have committed heinous crimes and worse heinous crimes than was done to her. And I really think that we need to take this seriously if we're going to revive basically a parole board. We are unique in Minnesota, and I really would ask you to reconsider just withdrawing the A7 and allowing this to go on.
Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I have deep respect for you. But I have to say I reject the premise that this bill is about a partisan decision-making process. As I indicated earlier, the commissioner had shared the lengthy, deliberate, intentional evidence base, experience base, multi-step process by which any of these individuals are currently being scrutinized relative to his current obligation, and extending that out to this panel. Nothing's going to change in that regard. Our expectation of this panel is to act according to the law, and not to act according to whatever partisan community offered them up, you know, as good public servants to take on this big responsibility. We don't pick our judges this way either. We don't do supermajority relative to that. And so, with all due respect, I think it's important that we not indicate as we move forward with this legislation that that its primary purpose is somehow to resolve partisan differences that exist. The only thing that needs to be addressed here is a way in which to include a broader array of perspectives, of decision-making within a tight, high-level process for vetting, reviewing these individuals who by law, by our law that we passed here, have an expectation to have a determination made once they've served their the time that law says that they have to serve. Representative O'Neill, I really wish we just didn't have the underlying amendment. I think, my argument really speaks to the construct of the bill before you But if we're going to do something like this, then I think we should continue to be part of the trend and the movement across the nation that states and other states, in their wisdom, have already decided that a majority of the panel members meets their expectation for high-quality decision-making. And so so I would, if we're going to persist with the A3 amendment, then I would encourage members to adopt the A7.
If I could just throw in a quick editorial, I believe it was Representative Mariani's deep respect for your opinion that he offers the A7 as a compromise, recognizing that there might be a chance that the supermajority at some point would become the norm. And in that case, then, we would go to it, too. Members, we have public safety in here afterwards, though, and I'm hoping that we can move along a little faster on these amendments and probably keep, hopefully, the debate to about 10, maybe 15 minutes on each one of the amendments. Have we exhausted the discussion and questions on this particular amendment?
I only have one final comment, and then I think we can vote. If I may.
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we actually are kind of saying the same thing, because you're talking about a very rigorous process that you would hope, I'm sure you would hope that there would even be a consensus. So I think we're kind of, so this is sort of the divide, I think, that we struggle with here in Minnesota. This conversation almost has illustrated that. But I know that it's a rigorous process. I know that it's very structured. And I would think that five people would come to the same decision. We would hope that all five would come to the same decision. So I think we're kind of saying the same thing. And, we don't have the votes on our side to stop the A7, and so I will just leave it at that.
Okay, thank you, Representative O'Neill. To the A7 amendment, all those in favor of the A7 amendment signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
I'm voting on the wrong amendment. I really think we should start off tomorrow.
You said aye, you got it right. The A7 amendment to the amendment has been adopted. So now we go to the amendment, the A3 amendment, Representative O'Neill. All those, any discussion?
I think we've discussed.
I agree, Representative O'Neill. I agree. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say aye. Okay, the A3 as amended has been adopted. Next would be the A4. Would somebody like to offer the A4 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that is my amendment, and we've had a pretty full discussion, and I think we all know where we stand. So I will withdraw that.
Thank you.
And I appreciate the conversation.
Okay. Next we have the A5 amendment. And who was going to offer the A5 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll move the A5.
And do we have an amendment to the amendment? Okay. Representative Zerwas, would you like to explain your amendment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A5 amendment deals with individuals convicted of
an offense involving the death of a peace officer prior to, I think it was 1993, we discussed in committee when the option was made available for the conviction of, or the sentence of, life without the possibility of parole. And understanding that several individuals with that conviction will be meeting their 30-year period coming up. Mr. Chair, I think that the offense of murdering a police officer in the course of their duties is so heinous that I would expect that decision not to be made for parole by a 5-member board, but to be made solely by the Commissioner of Corrections, who was appointed by the governor of the state of Minnesota. And so that's what the amendment aims to do.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. There is an amendment to the amendment, the A8. Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A8 amendment, and I'll speak to it very briefly. The A8 amendment maintains the integrity of the proposal before you, which is to have a high-level panel chosen by our top leaders in the state to make these kind of determinations, and again, consistent with the current rigorous process by which all individuals will be subjected to. I certainly agree with Representative Zerwas's observation about the particularly heinous crime of taking the life of someone whose life is to protect the rest of our lives. Under state law, those individuals continue, however, to be to have a legal expectation that once they've served their term, that there be a review and a decision relative to their possibility of supervised release. So nothing changes, members, in terms of what the proposal has before you. Those individuals also have the same rights that other individuals have. We can change that law, and perhaps that might be what might be the approach that we ought to be debating here. But until we do so, then the intent here is to apply equally to everyone the same level of high, rigorous review with careful determination by a group of people who are accountable to our respective legislative and executive branch bodies. And so, members, the A8 amendment simply reiterates the spirit and the intent that we have relative to this particular offense in terms of careful consideration of the impact of that that person's release to the public, but does not seek to distinguish their determination process from what the bill has before us. And so what Representative Zerwas has is that the commissioner, you know, will be making this decision independent of that body. So my amendment keeps the consistency of our approach consistent.
Any discussion to the amendment to the amendment? Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, on line 1.6 of the A8 amendment, the amendment to the amendment for the A5 that I am offering, Chair Mariani is moving to delete lines 9 through 15 of that amendment. Lines 9, 10, and 11 deal with inmates serving a mandatory life sentence for an offense that involved the death of a peace officer. And I'm wondering if it's his intention that those individuals, even if they have been sentenced to a mandatory life sentence, that they be now under this process up for parole review, because that would be highly troublesome.
I'm not sure why you're addressing the question to me, but Representative Mariani, or would we defer that to House Counsel here?
I'll certainly look for House Counsel support here, but I'll have a question for Representative Sirwas afterwards. Mr. Chair, I'll
Representative, ask, or Chair Mariani, if you would care to address the question.
I'll ask the commissioner, who has some insight on the distinction, perhaps, that Representative Sirwas is trying to make here.
Mr. Chair, I believe that, and Representative Sirwas, I believe that the distinction you may be asking is would this apply to those cases that would be, have been sentenced under the life without the possibility of parole? And that is not the intention. This would only be for those people who are subject to a mandatory minimum sentence under existing Minnesota law. Under the previous Minnesota law, until that was changed, I believe, in 1992.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Sirwas, I think another way of saying that is that that this part of your amendment isn't necessary because it isn't evoked by House File 2128. And perhaps that's the question for legal counsel then.
They're conferring at the moment.
And I guess, Mr. Chair,
Representative Sirwas,
as I read it, we insert language to affirm that except for inmates serving a mandatory life sentence for offense that involved the death of a peace officer defined in Section 626.05 Subdivision 2, making it crystal clear that those individuals would not be subject to this release, and it appears as though in the chair's, Chair Mariani's amendment, that he's striking that language as if he is trying to make that conviction, that previous conviction for the murder of a police officer with the mandatory life sentence now available to be reviewed by the board. The language is being inserted in my amendment and struck in his.
Mr. Diebel, can you qualify, please?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment to the amendment is striking proposed new language, and so this is not current law, so he's not changing anything that is in current law. This is just altering the proposal in the A5 amendment. So currently, if they're not eligible for all, the commissioner is not looking at their file anyways, and this is not addressing anyone it's not adding anyone to the commissioner's obligation to look at their parole.
That would seem to be the consensus from the commissioner, the chair, and House counsel. Representative Sirwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll ask for a roll call on the A8 amendment. We're very clearly trying to insert language that makes it crystal clear that these individuals serving a mandatory life sentence wouldn't be eligible for this board to grant them parole. With that language being struck out here, I have pretty big concerns with that. I'd ask for a no vote on the A5.
Okay, a roll call. the amendment to the amendment. A roll call has been requested. Adam, can you take the roll, please?
Chair Considine.
Yes.
Vice Chair Wolgamott?
Yes.
Representative O'Neill?
No.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Zerwas?
No.
Okay, the amendment has been amended by the A8. Now to the amendment. Is there any more discussion on the amendment? Not hearing any. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. Okay. The amendment is attached. Okay. Do we have another amendment? Or are we done? We have one more amendment, the A6. Who's offering the A6? Representative Poston, will that be you?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
And would you like to explain that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would. The amendment gives the governor the power to veto any release decision made by the board. Pretty straightforward and simple.
It is. Okay. Who's got the A10? Would somebody like to offer the A10 amendment? No. I'm a little confused about this. This would be the one case where I think, going back to what you were talking about, you would have the governor having absolute political. I'm not going to get into it. I'm sorry. Representative Mariani, would you like to address the A6 amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, members, this really does create a function in the governor's office that, it is precedent setting here. And we have a process now, again, that follows a strong rigor where there's a determiner, in fact, that we've named. We'll continue to name a broader panel here in participation with that. You talk about not wanting to make this issue partisan. This is how you make it partisan, because there's only going to be one political party that's going to be in the governor's office at any point in time. So, members, I would prefer that we not do this.
Further discussion? Representative Poston, do you have another comment?
Mr. Chair, I just, we talked about this in our committee meeting. I think this is the prudent thing to do. Give the governor that opportunity to use his veto power. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to research to see if other states are doing this, but I think there are some that do. And, I think it's the right thing to do, just to have that one more check put in place.
Thank you, Representative Poston. I guess my only remark is without consulting with the governor's office, I'd be reluctant to give him more duties than he already has. Representative Zerwas.
Well, I mean, Mr. Chair, if we look back over the years, in fiscal year 2013, there were two releases in the year. In fiscal year 14, there were zero. In fiscal year 15, there were seven in the year. And so what we're saying is if we're going to open this up to a new system where a new panel now makes these decisions, and we're not requiring that
there be anything other than a majority vote or not requiring in what the majority party here voted down. We're not requiring a unanimous decision of the board, and we're not requiring even a super majority of the board. We're saying that three of the five folks can get together and release somebody convicted of murder, of sexual assault, of very serious crimes. And what we're saying is there should be a relief valve. There should be an off-ramp that in case the board gets it wrong, that the governor has the ability to just say, you know what, no on this one. We're just not going to move forward on that one. It is not that different members from the process of release from the Minnesota Sex Offender Program with the SCAP review, where the Commissioner of Health has the ability to go against the recommendation of the SCAP panel of judges and try to prevent that release. And so this is not wholly unique in Minnesota state law, and I think this is definitely something worth considering, especially members, when you have already voted to not take the conviction of first-degree murder of a peace officer and make that reviewed by the governor. I think at the very least we should provide the governor with an option to intervene if he or she would decide that perhaps the panel just got it wrong. And we're all humans, and even a group of five people, when it only takes three to make a decision, there's a potential that maybe someone just gets it wrong. And this gives the governor an opportunity to just say, you know what? No, we're not going to do this. I think it's a very reasonable amendment, and it's one I think the committee should consider adopting.
Further discussion? Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, just very quickly, and you can see it in the failed A-10 amendment. You know, I drafted that amendment wrong. You know, the intent here is an important part of the intent of this bill is to have legislative authority be present. It was my hope that that countering the A6 amendment to make it real clear that that is important to us, that that's an important principle that should be at play here. That didn't work relative to the amendment, the possible amendment to the amendment. Members, at this point, I'd encourage us to take the A6 amendment, but I want to be real clear that I will come back to make sure that the language in the A10 amendment actually works, because it is about asserting this equal participation between the legislative and the executive branch on this most vital of all issues. So, Mr. Chair, I guess at this point I'd encourage you just to take the amendment and let's get on with it.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Mariani. I would like to, you know, again, move the A6.
Okay. No further discussion. All those in favor of the A6 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Representative Zerwas, did you? No.
Yeah, I did.
Sorry. Okay. The amendments are done. We are now on to the bill as amended. Chair Mariani.
Mr. Chair, it's time that Minnesota made this step, made this move. Again, there's nothing in this bill that challenges
or changes the high rigorous process that we have in the state to fully vet these individuals who under law have the legal expectation to have their conditional release be seriously taken by the state of Minnesota, be considered by the state of Minnesota. We're not alone in this understanding in our society. As the commissioner indicated earlier, a number of states have been moving in this direction. We're doing so with utmost care, with a high level of consideration for the victims of the offender, as well as the public safety of the general public. That's not going to change. I think this is a good way for us to expand the ownership of those decisions across our society, and I think has nothing but positive benefits back into our prison systems as individuals who may not get released, but at least will have an ability to make their case before a panel of their citizens chosen by this legislative body and by the executive branch and the other legislative body. I think there's just good positives with that. And so, members, I would urge your support for House File 2128 as amended.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Any final Representative Zerwas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Mariani, for working on this bill. I think where you're headed is the right direction. While I share concerns maybe with some of the specifics within where the new system would apply into all degrees that it would apply, I think overall in concept you're very much on the right track. And thank you for your work on this and your continued work as we move this bill forward.
And thank you, Representative Zerwas, for sharing your copy of 2128 with me.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to weigh in? Seeing none, we'll move to a vote. Thank you, Chair Mariani, for bringing. And again, I think the committee demonstrated that we're pretty much on the same page. We had some minor tweaks that we disagreed on, but the direction, I think, is good. Chair Mariani, would you like the last word?
Mr. Chair, I think I gave it.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to do it after you. All right. All those in favor of the bill, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And all those opposed? Wow. That's good. We will move this to Ways and Means. Is that the next stop on that? Public safety, right after the... Okay, yeah. Okay, and that will conclude our meeting. Thank you so much for your comments and your work. We're adjourned.